In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred and Little Stevens Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Today I'm speaking with Dave Klein, producer, engineer, and musician based in Los Angeles, California, who's worked with all sorts of garage and punk bands and played in several notable ones as well, including The Seeds and Agent Orange. And he recorded and co-produced my band The Woggles' latest single, Flesh Hammer, out this week on Wicked Cool Records. The song is a tribute to our late friend and bandmate, Jeff Walls, and the song itself written by Pat Beers of The Schizophonics, who bonded with Jeff during our final tour together. I'll play some of the song now, followed by my chat with Dave Klein on your coolest conversations in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Flesh hammer, gotta keep it going strong. Flesh hammer, you know we gotta pass it on. In the church of a sweaty
This is the Mighty Manfred, and today I am speaking with producer, engineer, and musician David Klein. Over the course of his career, he's worked with all sorts of punk and garage rock bands and played in several notable ones as well, including The Seeds and Agent Orange. David also recorded, co-produced, and played on the new Woggles single, Flesh Hammer. It's out now on Wicked Cool Records, and it's our coolest song in the world this week. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, Manfred. Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, man, and I'm very happy to be chatting with you.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. Well, I know you're from L.A., and your studio is out here in Highland Park, but what area of town did you grow up in?
Oh, well, I grew up in Westchester, which is home of LAX, and that was Crossfires and a bunch of bands back in the day. My dad actually still lives in the house that I grew up in, and then like pre-teen years, my parents split up and I wound up going to Orange County for a while. And that kind of which led me into getting into like surf music and punk rock and even playing in like garage bands too. So, and then I wound up circled back here in LA, and I'm just kind of where I've always gravitated towards. And I've been really, you know, just kind of comfortable here. So I'm actually third generation Los Angelino.
So. Wow. And I'm interested, you said when you went down to Orange County, that sort of led into you getting into surf and punk and garage rock things, because I've seen you, you know, play drums in some bands like the Bomboras and then other groups like the Ghastly Ones that you're on the keyboards. What is your first instrument?
Oh, I started off playing piano as a kid. We always had a piano in our house. So my mom had a music degree, and my great-grandfather was in the LA Philharmonic, and my grandmother was an opera singer and all this stuff too. So it's always, music's always been around in my family. And then kind of around the time, around fifth grade, my sister was actually playing drums in school. And then she taught me how to do my first, like, just drum roll and basic rudiments. And then I kind of started taking it in school. So that's kind of when I started getting the drums, was fifth grade, but I always kept playing keyboards and piano, and I would just kind of switch back and forth depending which band, you know? So I think I played more.
Well, let me ask you this thing about the piano thing. So your family definitely has this sort of a music history background to it. When you started playing the piano, was that something your mom had to make you take piano lessons, or did you have an interest in actually making music?
Yeah, well, so here's the thing, is my mom was when I was a little kid, my mom was getting her music degree at Cal State Dominguez Hills. So I was around I used to do the campus a lot. My sister and I would be there. I'd ride my skateboard. My sister would ride her roller skates around and we'd hang out and stuff. I actually wanted to be a conductor of all things when I was a little kid, because I was around, I grew up, my mom used to listen to a lot of records in the 70s growing up. A lot of it was Beatles, the Stones, the Carpenters, and a lot of classical music too. And there's a lot of other stuff she listened to too, but I was kind of around a lot of classical music as a kid. So, and that's kind of, a lot of it falls in my family too. So I just started messing around with the piano as a kid, just because I thought it was, because we always had one around. And I just had some, you know, I had an inherent ear for it. So I just started picking up without even taking lessons.
That's all really cool. So when did you actually start playing in bands? Was it in high school or?
Yeah. So the very first band I played in, I was around, so the first band I played in was a band called The Others, which was like a three-piece, a power pop band, and that was based out of Orange County. So they were that two guys, the band, it was Patrick and Alex, that was the bass player and the guitarist who sang. They were based in Laguna Beach, and I had a lot of mod friends in Laguna Beach. So I wound up replacing their drummer they had, and that was like the first band I actually started playing shows in. Now, the very first show I played in with them was in San Diego at Soma, and it was that New Sounds of the 60s show. And we played right after the Mummies. That's the first time I saw the Mummies. And I met Russell Blair and everything like that. So there's a lot of cool 60s bands and stuff too. I was really like crazy, stupid, nervous too at that show, because I'd never played a show before outside of playing like concerts and stuff, you know, in school, which I don't know if it really counts or not, but.
Well, how old were you?
We went to like the Bay Area and all these places to like play shows. And then after that, I wound up from The Others, because I was friends with like Jake and Steve Hill and Paul and stuff. They wound up asking me to join the Witch Doctors. So from The Others, I went to the Witch Doctors. And then from there, it kind of parlayed into like Lord Hunt of the Missing Things, the Bomboras, and all those bands that, you know, it just kind of kept doing little twists and turns.
Right. Well, let me go back to this for a second. So I want to find out, how old were you when you did this Others gig that was like the first kind of rock show that you were playing?
I think I was 17.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Just a child.
Exactly. Just a baby. Where did that guy go?
So then so it takes this twists and turns, and you're like playing in all these other sort of either 60s instrumental groups or kind of 60s, garage rock bands or bands that kind of draw on that that era. And then did this lead to you playing with the Seeds? Because I know you played with the Seeds when Sky Saxon was still fronting a version of the band.
Yeah, so the Seeds thing actually came from, it was kind of weird because I was playing in a garage band called The Invisible Men. And at the time there was, they were looking to put together a band to back Sky. And through the guy Keith that I used to play with, Invisible Men, he contacted me to contact another guy that was in the band too. And they're looking for someone to play, you know, keys. And I was, at that time I had my Ream organ. And I just had done stuff like, I was doing stuff in Little Men, but I really didn't officially play like organ in a band yet. Except for I want to rewind back a little bit too, because sure. I had done some cameo stuff on the first Gasolman's record when I unofficially wasn't a member. So that was the Honeywell Go-Go record. And then, so they contacted me to see if I wanted, if I was interested in playing the Seeds. And so I went and tried out. And at that time, the lineup was, this guy Gary Stern on drums, obviously Sky, this guy Rick, and this guy Mike Lino was playing guitar. So I was like the last little element to join that band and do the things. And then we kind of changed a few members through the course when I was in the band. We changed drummers. We did the recording. We recorded the Red
Planet, right? Red Planet.
Yeah, the Red Planet record. That one I played the majority of the drums on too. And that lineup was post the first European tour we did, and we had a different drummer, Justino, that got kicked out. So I brought in Norman, that I played in the Gasoline ones, to do a tour with us. But he actually, when it came down to the recording, he didn't have time to it. So I wound up playing most of the drum stuff on that record anyway.
So I wound up interviewing this guy one time with Kid Leo at South by Southwest. And it, I mean, it went right off the rails pretty quickly. It was very entertaining radio because it was live, you know, and yeah, this guy was pretty out there. Was being in his orbit pretty chaotic?
Well, so here's one of the things too, is that when I joined the Seeds, I had just kind of had a relationship that broke up and I needed to move somewhere. And so on the street where my former bass player, Shane, and they used to play with the Bombores, there was a house that was opened up and it had a little basement in it too. So he was like, hey, the guy that owns this place is pretty, you know, he's pretty mellow and into to bands. You should see about running that place out. Maybe you can start, put a little studio in the back. So we wound up moving in. And at first it was just the guy, Mark, that was playing the Seeds a little bit later, the guitar player. And I rented this house out and we had a little studio. That's where we recorded Red Planet at. Uh-huh. So what happened was Sky didn't have a place to live. And one day I come home from work and Sky's there. And we had the sun porch and all Sky stuff was on the sun porch. And they're like, oh, hey, by the way, Sky's moving in here. And I was like, oh, and that's where things kind of got kind of nutty in our house. It turned into this nutty band house. We had a lot of interesting visitors. Sky used to travel with a lot of stuff. So he was wore like multiple layers of clothes too. I don't know if people know, he always wore like two pairs of pants, two shirts, all that stuff too. And he was carrying two wallets with him all the time.
Well, did he ever explain that behavior? Why he needed the extra wallets and stuff? Or
he lived in the streets for a long time. So he was super street savvy too. So If you have two wallets and you're running from somebody or the cops or whatever, you can grab them. You can take the two wallets and pull yourself over barbed wire fence and razor wire. It's like an oven mitt to get over to escape from somebody.
Wow, man.
Never
Hey, that's some street smart lessons from Dave Klein via Sky Saxon today on your Coolest Conversations. That's pretty happening.
He had always interesting stuff with him and he always attracted interesting people. But I did some interviews with him when we were like in Europe. I was helping him like type his interviews out and the answers were pretty fun too, you know.
Do you recall any offhand?
Well, he'd be like, he would always quote things about dogs and wolves and all that stuff. Well, I want to say all dogs and wolves in space that are coming together, and this guy's really great, and this guy's really beautiful, and I love this, and hey, man, can I borrow your phone, and I need this,
So touring with him, I mean, actually physically being on the road with him, that must have been, we were trying to, 90% of the time, trying to keep him roped in. I mean, was he liable to run off and get lost, or?
Yeah. So I'll try to make this like a Reader's Digest version of the story, but we played the University of Manchester, and this is the lineup that we had Norman playing drums. And so we're there. And the thing was, we were playing with a show with a French band, a French garage band. I think they're called Men on the Moon. I don't know. This is like 2003. So it's a little while ago. Wow. It's almost 20 years ago. So the thing is that University of Manchester, we played like a hall that was like two or three levels up. Now There is the lift. The elevator, it was a freight elevator, and we put all the gear in. Now, I guess the thing in the UK or in that place, there was two buttons, like the old school buttons to turn the lift up and down.
Yeah.
Now, lift is going in the middle. If it's like mid of like going down or up and someone pushes the call button, it freezes and you're trapped for like hours. So we load all the stuff in and we're all kind of buzzed and had fun after the show. And it's like the band minus Sky and our tour manager. And we're sitting in this freight elevator. If the elevator goes down, you can start seeing the little window by your feet where it's coming down to the ground, where we're almost there to like open the door up and load it. Right. One of the guys in that French band pushes the call button and we get stuck, and you can see the little window by our feet of the first floor where we were going to unload. And Sky comes up and he's got you can see his face through the window, and he's like, mom, you guys are trapped. And we were stuck like that. We called the police. They said, oh, hang on, we'll wait for the fire brigade to show up and just hang tight. Well, we see Sky, and all of a sudden Sky tells us. So we're like, Sky, hang on, we're almost there, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I just did some acid. Bye. And he like splits. And then we're stuck in this elevator looking at each other. And all of a sudden we look around and we see the wall has just date after date after date after date. And it was all bands that were trapped in this elevator. The same thing. So I don't know if it's an exciting story, but that was.
Oh, but eventually you got out of there and you found Sky.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is, he would like disappear, like, you know, he would split and stuff for things, but he always came back, you know.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well, exactly.
So this Red Planet album that came out in 2004, and I read that around 2004, that's when you began to work earnestly towards a recording career, right? Is that when you were interning at Conway Studios in L.A.?
Yeah, it was just right after. It was kind of like right after that tour. So what happened was that house, we went on that tour, and the house I was in, I wound up putting my stuff in storage, and Mark moved out, and we emptied the house out. And then when I came back from that tour, the second tour, I actually had left the band at that point. Mm-hmm. It got really kind of nutty and stuff. And so I came back, and that house was actually available, and the landlord, you know, we were friends. So he's like, hey, move back in. And that's where I started post that tours where I did the internship at Conway, and I started really kind of getting into recording and this never ending bout with my wallet of buying and upgrading gear.
Well, was there any kind of epiphany moment that you had about, hey, you know, this is what I really need to be doing, or is it just sort of evolve the recording music?
It evolved. You know, I guess it just started from, because I just always liked recording. I kind of always like recording more than I like playing shows, which I know maybe sounds terrible, but it's just, I always like that aspect, the kind of nerdy aspect about the production side of things. And so I think my life is gradually just kind of leaning towards that. But the more and more I got into it, the more I liked it. Because I was always intrigued by recording gear for some reason. I don't know why. I like robots and stuff, so they look like robots. So so it's just it's a nonstop work in progress, I guess, if you want to call it that. You can always keep improving as you go. So,
well, so Conway Studios, how did you land the internship there? And what was it like working there?
So that's the funny thing. That actually ties in the seeds too, because the thing is that when I went to Conway, I started applying at studios once I started recording. And I was like, all right, I'm going to try to like further my education in a DIY sort of way, Hard Knocks, the School of Hard Knocks, the recording. So I actually applied. I just started applying at studios because I started recording stuff. And when I applied, it was Conway. And my resume I had was just basically records I played on, because I didn't have any, like, I didn't go to school or anything.
Yeah.
It just, I had been, I was 17. So so the manager, this guy, John Musgrave, that was the studio manager at the time at Conway, he saw the Seeds, and he was like a Seeds fan, like when he was a kid or whatever. So he did an interview with me. And he just like, he liked me. I was actually older than most of the interns there, because they were all like kids out of school, like around, I was 30 or 31 or whatever it was. So so I just kind of just did it. And I was working a full-time job. I was working there at night. So I was doing like 18-hour days, like almost every day. And then I would come home and I'd work on music, like work on records and stuff, and play shows and everything all at the same time.
So the stuff at Conway, that was very hands-on or not?
Yeah. And it was like, the thing about it too is that it was hands-on. It was intern. They wanted me to work there too. Like but then at that point, after I was there for like a year, I just wanted to kind of start doing my own thing. Cause I kind of got an idea of how all this stuff works. And, you know, I didn't want to work at a big studio, because I felt like I wanted to work on my own projects too. I figured I would learn that way. And I also mentored with a couple people too. One is a friend of mine, Chris Dammers,
mm-hmm.
He did a lot of big records. He's worked on a lot of like Grammy projects. And then another guy that used to be a James Brown sax player, Jeff Watkins. And he did a lot of, both those guys kind of gave me different.
Hey, David, let me interrupt here for a second. Simon may have caught this, but on my end, you sort of crapped out there. You were telling me about the second person that sort of mentored you. Who was that?
Oh, okay. So it was a guy by the name of Jeff Watkins. And Jeff was a James Brown sax player for a long time. I mean, I know the audience, my wife was a dancer, touring dance in the 90s. And one of the the longest job she did dancing, which was for like a decade, was she was a James Brown dancer. So her like tour, like road dog friend, Jeff, who's a sax player, he's one of the other guys that mentored me because he's worked on a lot of really big projects and a lot of big bands. So between him and Chris, I got kind of two different sides and different aspects on like music production and recording and mic placement and editing and all that stuff too. So, you know,
so you do this work there at Conway and they want you to stay there and you're like, no, I want to be doing my own thing. So you were there for about a year. When did you actually start your own studio in earnest?
Well, that was kind of, I guess it was during the same time, but I guess post Conway. So this is around, I guess we're getting towards 2005.
Okay.
And at that time also, I officially joined the Ghastly Ones too. Because before I was always like this like kind of unofficial fourth member. The band had split up and then the band reformed and did a couple shows. And then they said, hey, why don't you do this cameo? Or, you know, you've always been kind of like a guy in the band. So why don't you do some songs at the Key Club? So I went and played the songs. And then Norman's like, you might as well just join the band. You've always been kind of like the fourth member anyway. So all that stuff kind of happened all at the same time. It was like the Ghastly Ones and Conway and my studio. And
very cool. So the Woggles, we've used Rodney Mills to master our recordings for a while. And he started his career as an engineer and later came to prominence in the 70s for Southern rock stuff, you know, or engineering, producing like Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Atlanta Rhythm Section, the Allman Brothers. But before he did that, he did all kinds of stuff, including a lot of R&B and soul stuff. And one of the first sessions he engineered was a James Brown session. And, you know, he ran all the cables everywhere and they did the take and it was great, right? And then when they came to do the playback, it turned out they had actually not plugged in Brown's mic.
Whoa.
There's no vocal on it. And he had to admit that. And so he told him that. And like, you know, all of a sudden there's like dead silence in the control room and everybody's waiting for James Brown to like explode. And James Brown just, he's according to Rod and James, just kind of shrugged his shoulder and said, all right, we're going to do it again then. And, and they did. Right. So have you ever, so, you know, Ronnie was like, oh man, that, you know, it's just like that wasn't like the first session he'd ever done. But, you know, he was still fairly a novice-esque, but that was like a very basic thing, and he couldn't believe that he had blown it. Have you had any, like, big brain fart moment recording something, and what happened?
Nothing as cool as that. I mean, I try to be really super diligent about not losing stuff. I mean, I back my stuff up, like, 3,000 different ways and everything. Things do happen. Technical stuff happens or whatever. I mean, I could see that in a way also being, if he's kind of nervous about it too, because that's like, you know, that's a serious person to record there. You know, yeah. I could say I would probably do the same thing if it was someone like that too. I mean, I hate to even say stuff because it's like knock on wood or whatever. So there's like a punk band I worked with several years ago, and the band was kind of fighting in the studio, which is just always a lot of fun to witness. And one guy was like kind of riding my ass a little bit about things, and I wound up actually deleting a song when I went back to it. And that was just because I chalked it up to just because I was distracted by the whole situation. But I don't know. I mean, I bet you everybody has. I haven't had any real serious so far situation, but I'm kind of a worrywart with this stuff, so I try not to. But things do, you know, things get lost. Sometimes you delete stuff by accident or whatever. And, you know, the main thing is to try. The main thing about all this stuff is you just stay calm and try to make a big deal out of it. And if things get screwed up, you just admit it. You don't try to play it off or anything, you know. So I guess that's a boring answer. I'm sorry.
it's a good answer though. A solid answer.
You know, so Frigno here doing the Incredible Hulk sessions, and no, I'm just kidding.
Well, you've worked with Woggles, and you know I'm a DJ here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, but you've also worked with other Underground Garage DJs, Palmyra Del Ran and Speedy John. think Palmyra did the Palmyra Duran and Bubblegum project that she did with you. Do you recall that session?
Yeah, well, actually, she we did one. I think it was the Bubblegum one. She brought in Kim Shattuck too. She was good friends with Kim Shattuck, and Kim actually lived pretty close to me. She brought her in for backup vocals, which was
right. Really cool. Let me remark too. So that we're talking about Kim Shattuck of the Moths.
Yeah, and the Pandoras. Yeah.
And right. The Pandoras, right?
Yeah. I haven't seen Palmyra in a long time, but those were fun stuff. And some of the stuff I played on, I don't know if it was the Bubblegum one, but I'm kind of losing track of all this stuff. But Palmyra's a hoot. I mean, I did several stuff, a couple things with her too.
So. Well, with John, I think he was playing as part of that, but he also was in this band, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and they had a cooler song that you recorded called, Love Me, Kill Me. That was that was like 10 years ago, 2012, but you scoring coolest songs, that's just pretty much par for the course, right?
I hope so. I played on that stuff too. That love me or kill me song stuff.
Yeah,
too.
You play keys on that as well.
Yeah, and I played drums on that too.
Is there any projects you're working on right now that you're extra excited about?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of stuff going on. I mean, I got like 30 projects going on right now. But I'll say one thing: this just came out. I just posted about it today too. Last night, The Unclaimed was here. We're in the process of doing the new Unclaimed album.
And The Unclaimed is a Los Angeles area band, garage, kind of 60s garage thing, but they've gone through a lot of permutations. They were active originally when, back in the 80s?
Yeah. And that was like, you know, that featured like Lee Joseph from Dionysus Records was on it. It was in the band too. And like right now this week, the next couple nights, we're doing like night sessions where we're doing all the, we're kind of the tail end of it, but right now we're just kind of tracking the backup vocals and percussion and stuff too. But I've done a lot of stuff with the Unclaimed. So definitely, you know, if any listeners haven't heard The Unclaimed, they'd love it. It's you know, it's awesome, you know, awesome garage stuff. But yeah, this, one of the projects with them I did was they had Under the Bodhi Tree, which was a record that came out, I think it was late 70s or early 80s. And they've been pulling all the old tapes out. We've been having them transferred. And then I've been mixing them or mastering, just depending if they're mixes or they're remixed. So yeah. It's been fun bringing all this stuff, all the old stuff back to life and kind of giving it a whole new life too.
Oh, so, that's very cool.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I guess a year ago this past June when the Wallace went into the studio to record Flesh Hammer and the B-side, The Witch, and both those recordings feature Pat Beers from the Schizophonics on guitar. How familiar were you with Pat at the time? Had you already seen the Schizophonics?
Yeah, we played with them. And the Bomboras played with them before we did that session. We did, I think it was the Casbah. We did a show with them. But the amount of work, I've been working like 6 days a week just on records. So I'm kind of living I'm kind of a hermit. Now I think those are things, so I'm a little out of touch with that stuff. I basically get all my stuff from social media. I haven't been to a show in over 2 years, so I missed the whole pandemic just being a hermit, I guess. But yeah, Pat's really super nice guy, and yeah, definitely he's an awesome guitarist too, you know. So
you know, when I sent Flesh Hammer to Little Steven after we had finished the mix and everything, he asked me, he wrote me right back asking me if Pat was our new guitarist. And I said, no, he's got his own thing. And Steven wrote me right back saying, tell him your thing is his new thing. So then I sent him a live clip of Pat rocking out with the Schizophonics. And then Steven wrote right back, yeah, he's got his own thing.
Yeah. Man, I gotta hand it. Like, Little Steven's done like a really awesome job with the station. And I think he's really done a lot for helping, you know, all these, like, help promote these bands, you know. He's got brought a lot of people up that probably wouldn't normally get heard. So, you know, I tip my hat to him. He's definitely done a really, like, nice job with the station and everything too. So,
well, Dave, can you remind me how is it that we know each other? I mean, I remember coming out and doing shows with like the Invisible Men, And so someplace you were living, you were talking about, oh, I'm getting a studio together. Do you recall when, how we actually met?
You know, well, I don't, this is what I recall from this was, I remember the first time, because you guys were still in Georgia. Now, I remember being on tour, this is in the Bombores, so this is like late 90s, I guess. Mid to late 90s. And because I think we started about the same time, right? What year did the Loggle start?
1987.
Oh, wow. You guys started before we did then, because we started, the Bombores started early 90s.
Oh, yeah. Late commerce, but I don't hold that against them.
So the one, sorry, my ring thing is going off. So what I recall was that you guys were on tour and we were on tour and we were like a week apart. And the thing was too, at the time, Dan and I had the same like Keith Mooney bowl cut.
Oh, we're talking about Dan Electro, the drummer in the Woggles.
Yeah. And that people kept getting us mixed up too. And they're like, oh, the Woggles. Oh, you know, like people were telling us the Woggles. Cause we were like a week apart the whole entire tour. And then, I don't remember exactly where we met at. It must have been a show here, because I know we played that. Is it Cave Stomp? The one that was in Atlanta?
That was Fuzz Fest in Atlanta.
Okay. So unless I met you there, I don't remember. I know we played that thing, but yeah.
Well, I remember the Bombero. I remember seeing the Bombores in Atlanta at the Star Bar, but I can't remember. You know, what the context is, that was just a show that you guys were on tour, or whether that was a festival thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say that year we were we did like 1 year of touring that kind of killed the band, essentially. It was just because we were going hard. It was crazy. We would go, we would go out for like 4 weeks, come home for like a week, go back out for 5 weeks, come home for a week or two, go back. It was like back and forth. And one of the tours was like 8 weeks long. Not like include all this like this Canada stuff, and then we just got kind of burned out after that too, and band took a break for a long time. But
Wow. Well, you know, the Woggles guitarist Jeff Walls, he was Flesh Hammer, and he was in the band from 2003 till he passed away in 2019. Before that, he was in Guadalcanal Diary, and they had several albums on Elektra. He also had a band called Hillbilly Frankenstein for several years before he joined the Woggles. And his final shows with us were from early in 2019, and we were touring with the Schizophonics on the West Coast. And shortly after his passing, that's when Pat wrote the song that Bierce wrote, Flesh Hammer. Did you ever see Jeff play with the Woggles? Did you guys ever have a chance to speak?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I hung out with him a bunch too and stuff. He was super nice. Yeah, that was I saw him play with you guys a few times, but I can't recall where now. Everything's like kind of a big blur now to me.
Yeah. You know, on the, so on the recording we actually used, he has had a Selmer amp that he had sent out here. And that Selmer was the one that our previous guitar player, George Holton, had used. And when George swapped amps overseas in the UK one time, did a show and he had lugged over this some kind of Fender amp, but it was so heavy that, and he was, you know, big guy, but, you know, if he didn't have to exert himself, he was more than happy not to. And the Selmer sounded so great. He's like, oh, not only is it a killer amp, but it's lighter. And so those guys, the opening band and us, just swapped amps. And so we brought the Selmer back. And when George passed away, his parents said to Jeff, you know, if you're going to use the amp, you're more than welcome to it. And so Jeff did, and then he fell in love with the Selmer so much he got a second one, and he shipped that original one out here. And then we made a point to use that on the album, on Flesh Hammer and on the Witch. So, you know, we've got the spirit of the hammer's amp there, channeling him on Flesh Hammer. So you play keyboards on both that song and the B-side, The Witch, and we co-produce the songs with you. How do you see your relationship to a band when you're producing?
Well, I kind of look at all this stuff when I do it. Oh, first of all, that Selmer amp sounds awesome too, by the way. That thing just, it's a really great sounding amp. I like to work with bands. So I don't look at myself as this like big almighty producer guy or anything like that, but I definitely, you know, I feel definitely it's, I think it's, you should work with the bands because it's like, I feel like we're always kind of in this whole thing together, you know, and also doing this stuff. Cause I work in so many different genres and different bands and stuff too. You got to kind of figure out what each person's role is or how the band is too, and how involved you need to be too. Cause some people are very set how they want their records to be too. Right. So some people stuff to it too. So, I mean, it's kind of a case by case basis. Cause it's like, everything's like that as far as records, especially when you're switching genres constantly, it's just all going to be different. So it's like, I just learned to be kind of versatile with the stuff a little bit too, but yeah. You know, that's the,
well, how do you, let me interrupt for a second, because you mentioned earlier this punk band having an argument having an argument in the studio. What do you do then? I mean, how do you deal with that?
You just try to calm things down. Cause part of the thing about this, especially my place is small. So it's like, you know, you want to make sure things are cool, but I mean, you know, 99% of the times everybody's getting along and having a good time, and you try to keep people from getting too like hammered or whatever in the studio and everything like that too. But, and I realize people get impatient, you know, all these things. So I just try to take all this stuff. I try to take all this stuff in consideration, especially from the perspective of the band. Cause I'm not like some guy that went to school and got in this cause I wanted to go to school to do it. I did it cause I love doing it in a way too. So you let people just kind of like get things out of their system a little bit. And you're trying like, all right, hey, let's get back to work, guys. Blah, 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 blah. You know,
like cool. Oh, hey, you just touched on something that is whatever studio I've been into, it's story time. And this is a thing that happens, right? And I feel like, well, the engineer, I want to hear stories, want to share stories. And a lot of times that's a way for an engineer to take a break from mentally, just sort of clear their head. But, you know, that can eat up the clock a lot, right? And you want to hear it. So that's a fine line to walk, like, you know, the coffee clutch versus keeping things on track. How do you deal with that?
Well, I tend to like, I don't know if I'm a workaholic or whatever I am. So I tend to like just keep things rolling a little bit as much as I can. I mean, you need breaks. You got to take breaks from stuff too. The thing I try to do is keep people from, you know, I realize people want to have fun and stuff, but you don't want people getting too drunk or anything in the studio. It's kind of just, and plus their record suffers from it greatly too. And also keeping people, you don't need like thousands of smoke breaks or, you know, all that stuff too. So people want to pay me to go outside and cigarettes. I mean, that's fine, but it's kind of a waste of time. You know, you want to keep not a waste of time, but you want to keep the momentum going too. Cause there's a thing about, I know from being a drummer that once you're warmed up, you want to kind of keep rolling.
Right,
so
it's
trying to balance it between people need to have snacks, you need to have a lunch time, but you also want people to cool down too much. Vocals the same way too, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, keep cooling down because then you start losing the whole momentum that's going too. You know?
Well, let's talk a second about the B-side of Flesh Hammer, it's The Witch. And that actually was available as a digital single last year around Halloween, but now it's on the actual 7-inch record. And it's a cover of a song by the German band, The Rattles. Were you familiar with that Rattles version before we brought the tune in?
No, I haven't heard that version before. So it was, I was like, wow, it's really cool though. It was cool you guys picked that song too. But
we know what's funny about that is when we were talking, we're putting stuff on social media, whatever, we're covering The Witch. And then when the record first came out, a couple of guys made comments like, oh, the Sonics version is better. And it's like, it's a different song, dude, whatever, you know? So I just, oh yeah, like that. You're absolutely right. The song's version's better. I mean, it's a different song, but how important are the witch cackles to the Woggles version of The Witch? Because you've got those witch cackles on there. It's an important element.
I think it is. I mean, it's cool. You know, I don't even know how to answer that question. I think there's a couple rounds of us getting the cackles right. You know,
that's correct. Yeah, there were a couple rounds of getting the witch cackles right. But they sound pretty cool, I have to say. I mean,
yeah, I think though, but you know, I think all said is done. I think that it was, you know, there's a little bit extra time put in like the cackles, every little aspect and that stuff too. But I think in the the grand scheme of things, it's definitely worth it. I think the version came out really cool, you know. I don't think that the Sonics version's any better than the other version. They're just different.
They're wholly different songs.
Yeah, they just name. That's about it, you know. But I mean, they're different. But I mean, a lot of people have covered that Sonics version, which is totally cool. But no one's really covered that other version of the Witch, so it's kind of refreshing to have something different out there too.
You know? Well, Dave, I want to thank you. Thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thanks, Manfred. Can I plug my studio stuff?
Yeah, you can plug your studio stuff.
DaveKleinRecording.com, and then also on Instagram, Dave Klein Recording, and then Facebook is just Dave Klein Recording or Dave Klein.
All right. Well, it's B-side time. Time to hear the Witch from the Woggles and Little Steven's Underground Garage. That was my band, The Woggles, with some of The Witch here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's the B-side to our new single out on Wicked Cool Records, Flesh Hammer. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Dave Klein for being my guest today, and thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Back in June, Boston's legendary Nervous Eaters released a new single, Wild Eyes, and that will appear on their new full-length album coming out in November. Also off the upcoming album is a new digital single, Superman's Hands, out now on Wicked Cool Records. And joining me to talk about that track, the upcoming album, and the band's history in general is the group's founding member, Steve Cataldo. He's my guest next time around on your Coolest Conversations here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.